Yud Dalet Iyar, Pesach Sheni, Wednesday the 18th of May, Rabbi Elchanan Goldblatt, a parasha theme.
Good morning, and thank you very much. Can I just say that the Marim Kermas are optional, if you want to look at them, do, and otherwise I will try and say anything that needs saying. The parasha begins in Bechukos Saite Lechu. If you go in my statutes, Ves Mitzvah Saitish Meruvas, Yisem El Som, and you keep my commandments and you do them. And on this there is a very famous Rashi. Rashi says in Bechukos Saite Lechu, if you go in my statutes, Yochel, I might have thought Zekiyah my mitzvahs. I might have thought that the phrase Bechukos Saite Lechu means to keep mitzvahs. Shuomer vis mitzvah saitish meruvah, as the pasuk continues and says, if you keep my mitzvahs, hari kiyam my mitzvahs omer. So the keeping of the mitzvahs is mentioned elsewhere in that pasuk. So b'chukos saitei teilechu can't mean kiyam my mitzvahs. Hamani mechaim in b'chukos saitei lechu. So what am I to learn in the phrase b'chukos saitei lechu? You go in my statutes. Shetiyu amelim batur, that we should work at learning, that we should labor. And that, as I say, is a famous Rashi. And what I want to discuss this morning is this, labor at learning, why? I mean, if I've done the learning and I know it, why particularly, what benefit, what advantage, what difference does it make whether I actually had to work it out or not? We all from time to time meet geniuses, people with photographic memories, people who see everything the first time, and I remember a young man I learnt with for a while in Yeshiva, it was impossible. He asked Tosfos Kasha as I began the Gemara, and he asked the Masha as I began to get to the Tosfos. I simply couldn't keep up with that. Is there anything wrong with the fact that he didn't have to work? Or at least, if he worked, it was slightly different from me. So there is a sicha which the Rosh Yeshiva Reb Chaim Shulevitz used to give in Parshas Truma. He gave it Parshas Truma Tovshin Lamed Beis. And it discusses this question among others. And what I would like to do this morning is to go through... some of the makaris which Reb Chaim used to discuss as he was talking about this sugya, and see what we can find from them. The first one, as I say, is Parshas Truma. Everyone will remember that the psukim Parshas Truma say that everybody had to give, kol ish asher yidavenu libo, each person had to give what his heart prompted him to give, and there is a list of what the various items that were to be given were. This is what you have to give: gold, silver, and copper. Those are the various metals, precious and not. The various sorts of cloth. And the skins of the various animals and the wood. The oil and the spices. And the precious stones for the ephod and the choshen. And it's a little bit surprising that it begins with zohov, which is gold. It then moves on through things which are of lesser value, for example, the copper. And then at the end, suddenly the avnei shoam and the avnei miluim. What are they doing at the end? Question arises as to how much value they had. So there is a Gemara in Kiddushin. The Gemara in Kiddushin is really about the mitzvah of kibudah, but incidentally, it tells us the value of avnei shoam and avnei miluim. The Gemara says like this: Shalus Reb Eliezer. They asked Reb Eliezer, "Ad heichem kibud of v'aim? How far does the mitzvah of kibud of v'aim extend?" So Reb Eliezer said, "I'll prove it to you from a particular person, a Gentile, a goy, a man who wasn't Jewish." So Reu ma'osa ovid kichovim echad la'ovid ba'ashkelon. Go out and see what a particular goy did for his father in Ashkelon. Udomu ben Nesina Shmo. His name was Domu ben Nesina. Chachomim offered him 600,000 coins to buy from him precious stones for the ephod, and Adnei Shoam Adnei Miluim Lo Ephod Lachoshen are part of the last two things in our list there in Parshas Truma. The Chachomim asked, they wanted to buy from him these precious stones, and they offered him 600,000 coins. Rav Kana Masna Bishmoinim Ribu, not 600,000 but 800,000. Voyamafteach, and the key to where the precious stones were stored, was Munach Tachas Rashusov Shel Ovir, was placed underneath the pillow of his father, below Tiro, and he wouldn't upset his father, he wouldn't annoy his father, wake him up. I mean, just to make money, one should make one's father. just to make 600,000 or possibly 800,000. I mean, sounds to me like beating the lottery. I don't know. Anyway, he wouldn't do it. So what happened? Lishono Acheris, in the following year, Losna Kodesh Baruch Hu Schoro, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave him his Cha, Shanodu Le Pora Aduma Be'edro, that a Pora Aduma was born in his flock. And so on. So he did not lose any money by doing the mitzvah, in which, by the way, being a goy, he wasn't, I presume, chayev. Okay. So that's the Gemara. It's famous, it's great, and it tells us all about Kibudov. But also it happens to tell us what the value of Avnei Miluim Lo Eifod are. The value of Avnei Miluim Lo Eifod, and our apostle said Avnei Miluim Lo Eifod Velachosha, which is more than that. Avnei Miluim Lo Eifod is 600,000 or possibly 800,000 gold coins. It's the same value as a Pora Aduma. So it would seem then that that is enormously valuable, perhaps more valuable than the Zohar, certainly more valuable than the Nechoshes, for sure more valuable than the various different Besomim. So why is it then that in the list of items that were offered by Klal Yisrael as the Nedovah to the Mishkan, the Avnei Sham and the Avnei Miluim are at the end? They were, as everybody knows, brought by the Nesiim, by the princes. There is a Gemara in Yuma which says this. I don't know how aware people are of the fact that the word Nesiim in Lashon HaKodesh has two meanings. Nesiim means princes. Nesiim also means wind. I have a theory which I have no evidence for, and I haven't properly checked it, but moving into the biblical Hebrew phase, since for many years I taught biblical Hebrew, Nosa is to lift. I wonder whether Nesiim of people are lifted above the community, and clouds are things which are lifted up into the sky. I can't tell you, but it's a theory. Anyway, the Gemara in Yuma says, on the Pasuk V'hanasiim heviu eisav ne'a shoam tana Nesiim mamash, that the Nesiim, the princes who brought the clouds, who brought the precious stones for the Eifod and for the Choshen, as a matter of fact, they were a free gift. The Nesiim didn't have to work for them. The clouds brought them and delivered them and deposited them with the Nesiim. And I presume that, chatting that Gemara, the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, which says, Nesiim v'ruach v'gefshem oyin, clouds and wind and there's no rain. And it goes on and it talks about how clouds and wind and no rain is somebody who boasts about a present he's going to give and never actually gives it. Good, fine. So the Gemara learns from that pasuk that the precious stones were given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the agency of clouds to the princes, and the princes then gave them to the Mishkan. So the Orach Chaim asked the question with which we began. We ask in that list, Zohar, V'chesiv, Nechoshes, Chelis, V'agamon, and so on, why the Avnei Shon and the Avnei Miluim at the end? And we proved from the Gemara in Kiddushin that the Avnei Shon and Avnei Miluim were extraordinarily valuable. So the Orach Chaim says this, Od nira al pi divreim zal she'omru v'yumar, it would also seem that the reason why these precious stones are mentioned at the end of the list, not the beginning, is because she'anonim oyum meviim es avnei ha'shoam, because the clouds brought these precious stones to the princes. In Cain, mikshulchun gavoa hoyum meviim v'loi teirach v'yegiyo v'loi chisorim kis. In that case, when the princes gave these extraordinarily valuable presents to the Mishkan, there was no Torah, there was no trouble, there was no Yegiya, there was no work, it didn't cost them anything. It was things which they had got for nothing. Since it was things which they had got for nothing, Asher al kocho seder nidvosam acha kolan advos, shemivim bikisim v'al yidei Torah. So the way the Rosh Yeshiva understood this Orach Chaim is like this. From an absolute sense of the value of the precious stones, they were the most valuable things there were. However, they're also the least valuable things there were. Nechoshes, copper, which somebody has had to work to produce and then has to give, it costs him, has a greater value than these extraordinarily precious stones which were just dumped next to their tents by the clouds. Not only that, why is it that the princes were given these precious stones and nobody else? Presumably because of their tzidkus and their godless. Presumably they were people of such extraordinarily great quality that they deserved that this should be done for them. It is not, I mean, I used the phrase the lottery, it's not just like the lottery, which is chance, if there is such a thing as chance. The Nesiim deserved to have these stones. Nevertheless, because there was no Yigiyah, because there was no Amel, so the gift per se has less value than all those gifts which came from Omol, from Yegiya, from Torah, from Kisor and Kis. And that is, according to the second Pshat of Yerachayim quote, the reason why it's right at the end there. So it becomes apparent from that that omol, that the work what one puts into something, that of itself gives it value. The copper which people put work into getting is higher up the list than the precious stones which they didn't because of the work. Let's go on. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, a Mishnah and a Gemara. The Mishnah talks about someone who has deposited fruit with his friend, that his friend should look after it. Reuven has deposited fruit with Shimon and says, Shimon, look after it for me, I'll be back. Says the Mishnah, Hamafkid Peiris Eitzel Chaveira, someone who deposits fruit with his friend, Afilu Hein Avudin, even if they're beginning to decay, Lo Yiga Behem, he shouldn't touch them. Rabbi Shim ben Gamliel disagrees with the Tanakhama. Rabbi Shim ben Gamliel says that if Reuven has deposited fruit with me to look after, what I should do is in the presence of a Beis Din sell it, in the presence of a Beis Din so that the value is established. Why? Because it's Kameshiv Aveda Levalim. If we simply do nothing, then the fruit will lose value and eventually it will be worth nothing. Even the Tanakhama, later in the Gemara discusses at what stage the Tanakhama says that the loss in the value of the fruit is such that the Tanakhama will agree. But for the meantime, in the early stages, the fruit is beginning to lose value. The Tanakhama says, I simply have to hold on to it. I cannot do anything with it. Somebody else has deposited it with me. It's his fruit. I can't sell it and give him the money. And Rav Shimon ben Gamliel disagrees. So the Gemara asks, my timer, what's the reason of the Tanakhama? Amar Rav Kana says, Adam Reitze Bekav Shaloi Mitisha Kavn Shel Chaveira, the person who deposited the fruit with me would prefer to have his own fruit back rather than getting significantly more money. Let's assume that the fruit today is worth £10 and tomorrow it'll be worth £9 and the day worth after it'll be worth £8. So I could sell it today for £10 and give him the £10. Or we could wait 2 days and give him back his fruit, which will by then be worth £8. He'd prefer to have his fruit rather than the £10. So says the Gemara, and that's chat in the Tanakhama in the Mishnah. Why? Says the Rashi, and I apologise for the fact that I didn't print the Rashi up on the sheet, but if we have a look in the Rashi there on the Gemara, Chaviva Olav Al She'om Al Bohem, it has more value for him because he worked for it. Said the Rosh Yeshiva, the things on which I work are valuable to me. When we were talking about the Nisim, about the fact that the gift of the Nisim is last in the list according to the second Pshat in the Orach Chaim because of the fact that it was given to them for nothing, the Pshat in that is that they didn't value it either. You know, something which just came to me from the clouds, I'm happy to give away. Something which I work at, not people say, I don't know if it's true, people say that somebody who works all his life to build up a fortune is really very careful about what he does with it. And the children who inherit it, easy come, easy go, it's much easier for them to squander. Now, the reason why I may not dispose of the fruit for the benefit of the owner is because he wants it because he worked on it. The fact that he worked on it gives it value to him. The Reb Chaim used to say that there is only one individual mitzvah in the whole of the Torah to which there is attached a mitzvah of hishtachavoyo. There's only one case in the whole Torah where there's a particular mitzvah and a chelik in that mitzvah of a yochid is vishtachavesi, I have to bow down. And it's the mitzvah of Bikurim. If you have a look at the pasuk, it's number 8 on this list. I apologize, by the way, at this time of year we're supposed to be learning how to count. If you have a look at the numbers, you'll discover that I can't. One of them is missing. Still, there we are. Says the Pasuk Vator, and now, Hinehe Vesies Reishis Periyu Adamo Hashem Osato Li Hashem. Behold, I have brought the Bikurim from the land, with the first fruits of the land which you, Hashem, have given to me. Vinachto, and you put it down, Lifnei Hashem Elokeach, in front of Hashem your God, Vishtach Adeiso, and then you bow down, Lifnei Hashem Elokeach, in front of Hashem Elokeach. There is no other mitzvah yochid in the whole of the Torah which has a mitzvah Vishtach Avoyo. So why is this one? What's so special about Bikurim? So the Rosh Yeshiva went through the same series of ideas which we've had, which is this. First, that the first thing that a person produces is in many ways the most valuable to him. But secondly, somebody has cleared the stones, he's ploughed the land, he's planted, he's pruned, he's whatever it is that farmers do to produce the Bikurim. He has put an enormous amount of effort into it, and here is the first thing that he's produced as the result of his effort when he takes that and gives that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's exactly the reverse of the Nisim. That is giving the thing into which he put most effort, and because he put such enormous effort into it, that's why he values it. One might have said, contrasting this with the Avnei Sham and Avnei Miluim, that Midaraisa there's no shear in Bikurim, you're Yoytza with a Mashahu. So you could take a Mashahu, Midaraisa, and bring the Mashahu, and on the one hand you're telling me that this Mashahu which he brings in Bikurim is so valuable that the Pasuk says there's a mitzvah, Yishtach Avoya, prostrate yourself flat out there on the ground, and on the other hand, the Avnei Sham and Avnei Miluim, where the ones for the Ephod alone are worth 600,000 gold coins or possibly 800,000 gold coins, which would you or I have thought was the greater mitzvah? One would have thought the one which has the greater value, but is not so. The one into which the effort was put, the one into which the Omel, the Yegiyah, the Torah, that's the one that is valuable to the person who put the effort in, and that's why it is that the mitzvah of Bikurim, the mitzvah of Bikurim has such weight, such impetus, that here there's a mitzvah of bowing down. The next one, number 9, really requires understanding. Everybody knows the story of the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu and it was at that time that there was a very serious piece of anti-Semitic persecution, and any boys were supposed to be thrown into the Nile. People may not know this. Everybody knows why Moshe is called Moshe. I wasn't planning to say this, but let's say it anyway. You remember the pasuk tells us, Moshe ben Shmonim Shana, Aaron ben Shalosh Shmonim Shana, Omadom lifnei Faro, that Moshe was 80 and Aaron was 83 when they stood in front of Paro. Why do we need to know that? So Rav Shimon Schwab quotes a Medrash Rabbo, and it goes like this. We all of us know why Moshe was given the name Moshe. He was called Moshe, says the Pasuk, Kimin Amayim Meshisiu, Bisio, the daughter of Paro, said, I drew him out of the water, and that's why he's called Moshe. People may not know why Aaron is called Aaron and why Miriam is called Miriam. There's a Medrash which says that Aaron is called after, is Meloshon Bataha, to give birth, to conceive. And Miriam is called because of the pasuk Vayemoreru es Chayeyem, because they embittered their lives. You'll remember that there are three stages in the persecution. Stage one is Vayemoreru es Chayeyem. Stage two is when the midwives were told to kill any male babies. And stage three is when everyone was told to throw children in the Nile. Miriam was born at the first stage, and she was called after Vayemoreru es Chayeyem, after the embittering of their lives. Aaron was born at the second stage, when the midwives had been instructed to kill all male babies, and Moshe was born at the third stage, when the children were supposed to be thrown in the Nile. And those are the three names: Miriam from Vayemoreru, Aaron from the Miloshon Heroyon, and Moshe min Amayim Meshisiu. And what Rav Shimon Shrav then says is this: Paro has been making gezeiros. The first gezeirah is Vayemoreru es Chayeyem, the second gezeirah is kill the boys, and the third gezeirah is throw the children in the Nile. And they stand in front of him, the living evidence that his gezeirahs don't work, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu's gezeirahs work, because here is Moshe who's 80 years old, and named after the gezeirah of throwing the children in the Nile, and here is Aaron who's 83, named after the gezeirah of killing the boys. I've forgotten why I've got into this. Oh, right, yes. I beg your pardon. Number 9, which is the Gemara in Sotah. So, when Moshe was born, his mother, Yecheved, hid him for 3 months, and then she prepared a box of rushes, an ark of rushes, and she put him in it in the Nile. And there is, on that, a Gemara in Sotah. Vatikach lo tevas gomer, she took an ark made of rushes. Maishna gomer, why rushes? Rebbe Lozer says, "Mikan the tzaddikim shem amonim chaviv aleim yosem migufon." From here, we see that money is more beloved to tzaddikim than their own bodies. Rashi explains that she could perfectly well have made an ark out of wood, which would have been more expensive but better, but she did the cheap option. And why is it that money is so valuable to tzaddikim, more than their own bodies, such that Yecheved, the tzaddikes, took an ark of bulrushes rather than ark of wood, which would have been better? Because tzaddikim do not indulge in stealing. This Gemara, as it stands, is extraordinary. The way the Rosh Yeshiva explained it was like this. Remember that the whole thesis that we've been going through, the thesis about why the Avnei Shoam are at the end, they're at the end because no effort was put into them, it's effort which makes things matter to people. The reason why it is that I'm not allowed to sell somebody else's fruit, which I'm looking after, even if it's in the early stages of decay, is because since he worked at it, it matters to him. The reason why Bikurim is so extraordinary and important, and there's a mitzvah, Hishtachavoya, is because of all the work that the person put into it. Says the Rosh Yeshiva, a tzaddik is so concerned that his money should be 1,000% kosher min ha-mahadrin, that he has shivur v'dikas on every single piece of money to make sure that money is 100% kosher. It's not the money of itself which matters so much to the tzaddik, it's the enormous effort which he's put in to make sure that there's no shayla ki who's there, that this money might conceivably belong to anybody else in any fashion whatsoever. Why is it that the Gemara says that their money matters to them more than their bodies? Why is it the Echeved took the option of Tevas Goma instead of Tevas Eitzim? Because of the enormous Omel, Yagia, Tircha, the effort, the work, the labor she'd been into, gone into to make sure that it was kosher. I have a friend, a distinguished gentleman living in this area, Rabbi Zaiden. When he was living in South Africa, one of the things which he sometimes had to do in the parnasa which he had there was to clear shuls where there were no longer people there and they were going to be closed and so on. And he found there some very interesting svarim, including various chalokim of the Mishnah Berurah. On the front page is written in handwriting the word mugor, which means checked. The Chofetz Chaim used to check the copies of the Mishnah Berurah before they were sold. He's got some mugor, the Chofetz Chaim checked it, because he would not, Chas v'Shalom, sell a sefer under his name, even his pseudonym, in which there were bits in it that were wrong, that hadn't been properly printed, whatever else it might be. Tzadikim go to Shiva v'dikas to make sure that every piece of money that they have is 100% kosher. So why is it that Gemara says tzaddikim mamonim chaviv alein migufon, yoseh migufon? Not because of the money per se, which tzaddik of any of us met who was remotely interested in money, but because of the time and the effort which they have put into making sure that the money is no less kosher than the matzahs. Okay. There is a famous pasuk which says kiim v'saras Hashem chefzo v'saroso yege. And the Gemara in Kedushin explains the pasuk begins by saying Torah Hashem, the Torah of Hashem, and it finishes by saying so or so His Torah. There is a process by means of which the Torah that we learn, we acquire it, we get ownership of the Torah that we learn. Says Rashi, Bitchilo hi nikras Torah Hashem. Initially, it's Torah Hashem. Mishel lemodo v'derosa. Once someone has learned it and memorized it, hi nikras Torah. It becomes my Torah. So the Rosh Hashiva is the same thing again. The process of omel, the process of yigia, not just learning. And I read it. Now I know it because I'm very clever. But the yigia and the omel turns Torah Hashem into my Torah. There's a famous Gemara, the Gemara in Megillah, Amar Rabbi Yitzhak said, "In Yom Lecha Adam, if a person says, Yogati v'loy motzosi, I worked and I didn't get there, I'll tell him and don't believe him. Lo Yogati, I didn't work u'motzosi and I got there, I'll tell him and don't believe him. Yogati u'motzosi, tamin, if he says, I worked and I got there, then you believe him." And I always assumed that what that meant was, the Gemara is saying that someone who doesn't work is never going to know and understand. Reb Chaim learns not like that. Reb Chaim links this to the Gemara of the Rashi we just looked at in Kiddushin. He says it's talking about ownership. It's not talking about understanding, it's talking about ownership. If I just learn and I read it and I know it and that's that, so that's not called motzosi. I may well know it, but if there was no yigia, I haven't got ownership on it. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care about it sufficiently. Things I put time and trouble into, I gain ownership of, and I care about, and they matter to me. Like the precious stones with the Nisim, like the fruit of the owner, like the Bikurim, and so on and so forth. Chaim says very clearly that Yogati u'motzosi is not talking about knowing and remembering it Some people can get that without Yigiyah. Yigalti Umutsosi means that it becomes so like that Gemara in Kiddushin. There's a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says, Posuch Reb Yudah b'chvoy Torah v'dorash haskesu shma Yisrael ayyom azen yesala. On this very day you've become a people, b'chiyos ayyom nitna Torah Yisrael, was Torah given on that day. Hala osa yom sofar boim shona hi, it's the end of 40 years. Lala medchot shechaviva Torah al lindel b'chol yom v'yom. Ki yom shenit mehar Sinai. Torah is as beloved to the people who learn it every day as on the day that it was given. So to Rosh Hashim, it's the same thing again. People who work at it, not just people who read it and move on, people who work at it, people who amal yigiyah Torah into it, it becomes beloved to them, it becomes important to them, it becomes their Torah, we acquire ownership of it, it becomes ours, it's like the day it was given. One more mocker, and then we'll go back to the Chukosai, which is where we began. Reb Chaim very firmly believed that people imagine that if I give you a present, then you will love me. Reb Chaim said, that's not how it works. If I give you a present, then I will love you. He used to quote the Masechet Talos, Masechet Kala Ravsi, which I put there. Im chovitz ato lidobik ba'avas chavercha, if you wish to love your friend, have a nois of a noisen, but also do your best to help him, or have tola reacho kamocho, quotes the Pasuk. He used to quote an opus tzadikim, spelling it out. People imagine that I love the people who do good things to me. That's not how it works. It can work like that, but that's not what he thought. He thought, I love the people to whom I do good. Let's think about our children and our grandchildren, and then no further explanation is really needed. So what have we tried to establish from these 10, 11, 12, 13 pieces of Chazal at which we've looked? We have tried to establish that people value things if they put amal, if they put time, if they put work, if they put effort into it. Not only that, they value them, they acquire ownership of them. Torah Hashem becomes Torah so if you work at it. Yogati Umatasi means I worked at it. Going right back to where we started in B'chukosai Teilechu, says Rashi, B'chukosai Teilechu, you should go in my statutes, does not mean Kiyum Mitzvahs, it means working at learning. Reb Chaim believed that if we work at our learning, it will matter to us. If we work at our learning, we will come to love our learning. If we work at our learning, then we get ownership of our learning. From being Torah Hashem, it becomes Torah So, and that's the point of this Rashi. The point of this Rashi is that if we merely learn the Torah, remember it, know it, understand it, yes, that has value, but it's not enough. If we work at it, then we'll not only learn it, remember it, understand it, but we will love it, and we'll value it, we will acquire ownership of it, and it becomes ours. Thank you.